RTI.
Welcome back to Postcard from Pop Rap Part 2, boys and girls, with me, Eric Wiltshire, at the base of the beautiful Tatry Mountains, which none of the other two have got, with a little bit of snow on the top, although it's a warm. We're looking at an Indian summer temperature coming up here very soon. On the zit of the nose of Europe, it is none other than Lee Banks in Paris, who's probably going to be murdered shortly or taken to the... what do they have? The Bastille, don't they, in Paris? It's Mark Gander. We're looking at some news with a slightly alternative twist on it. Moving straight on as we cram some more in. Right. A purple potato.
I've lost the purple potato. Hang on.
It's the purple people eaters.
I could tell you about purple potatoes. They're absolutely delicious.
Really?
They're very, very firm, waxy flesh. They make fantastic crisps if you want to crisp them up. And I can tell you what, they're very easy to grow. And I used to grow them in pots on a roof terrace. And I used to get loads of them. That was in North London. I've also grown them in France.
Brilliant.
The purple potato.
He sounds like one of those wine reviewing people.
Yes.
Well, apparently these...
Except he reviews potatoes.
Oh, I'll review anything. I'm quite easy.
Have you ever had purple potato smashed?
They're magic. Yeah. And I mean,
magic
if you want
potatoes.
Yes, you find them growing on Hampstead Heath. Magic
potatoes.
People pick them in the morning.
Yeah.
That's why they're purple, isn't it?
Oh, fellas.
Well, purple haze.
Oh, Jimi Hendrix, of course. Anyway, these purple potatoes grown in Scotland are about to go on sale in UK supermarkets. Blimey. They were developed at the Colorado State University from they're playing with all the genetics and stuff like that. And the potato is now being grown by Perthshire producer Albert Bartlett, good old boy. And apparently these are supposed to be good for you because they contain antioxidants.
Yeah.
What do they do for you then?
Well, they deoxidize you.
Oh, right.
Well,
they
slow down the aging of cells, don't they? But, I mean, also, there's this same kind of effect that I think you're meant to get from beetroot. It can sort of drop your blood pressure, and it has quite a significant effect for quite a long time.
Oh, right.
But seriously, I mean, I don't want to undermine these people for their efforts they're making in Scotland for growing the potatoes, but I really do grow them in pots, or have grown them in pots until quite recently.
Uh-huh.
And they're great fun, and they taste delicious.
Well, I think I put my foot in it one day in a restaurant here. We were talking about having this soup. And they were going on about it, and I didn't quite understand, because when I first came here, and they were offering me borscht. And when I tasted it, I said, it's beetroot soup. And they looked at me as if I was some kind of heathen. Well, it is beetroot soup.
Yeah.
Of course,
it's beetroot soup, you're quite right. It's gorgeous.
It's with a few extras in it. Anyway, yeah. Thank God we've got one positive story about the UK today. It's a miracle around the world. We've got one positive story about the UK. Digital TV is leading the way in the UK.
Absolutely boring.
as latest figures have just come out from the UK regulator, showing that the digital take-up on television has grown even more, and it looks to be with both first and second sets, over 80% of all TVs have been converted to digital, and that's going to continue. So there's only 20% of sets left in the UK receiving analog terrestrial broadcasts, which begs the question: why don't they just turn them off?
Because it's a human right to watch TV on analog if you want to. This has been foisted upon the British public, right? They've just made us have it. We didn't want it. Telly's taking over our lives, and the internet's taking over the other bit of our lives, and now they've foisted digital on us. I hate them.
And if you hear a sound that's going beep, beep in a minute, that'll be Lee's steam train waiting for him outside his house.
Yes.
I have a steam train.
Yeah, I'm sure you've...
particularly when I've been eating purple potatoes.
It's the purple people eaters. How's digital telly in France, Mark? Do you know?
Well, they've certainly got it all over the place. I mean, we have one here. But I don't know, you know, how popular it is throughout the country. But I mean, you were asking, you know, why don't they simply switch it off? Well, I'm sorry to sort of, you know, get the violins out and so forth, but probably the people who haven't replaced the televisions yet are maybe the people who can't afford to. And, of course, you know, Lee talks about it being a human right to watch television. I suppose it is. And, of course, it's a great source of enjoyment for many people.
Yeah.
And it seems to me, you know, particularly in a time of economic crisis, maybe quite serious for some people, to suddenly find their televisions don't work and they're obliged to go out and buy a new one.
I'm just wondering how many people would struggle to spend... I've seen them as low as £10 now. On
£10?
I'll have 50.
Stop it. I will. £10.
I want in every room.
Oh, you Luddites.
Where do you get them for £10?
You can get a converter box for your analogue telly for about a tenner.
Really?
Right.
Does it work? Nothing else in this world works.
Not when you touch it.
Why would that work?
Well, of course, there is a prerequisite to this. The warranty says, except if it's going into Lee Banks's house, because it probably won't work. But on sales, you can find these as low as a tenner. And I've seen ones that plug into your computer, turn your computer into a television set, which even records digitally and allows you to store it on DVD for the likes of £20. So there becomes a point where you have to say, really?
Really? Here's a top tip for you, Mark. A consumer top tip, right? When you buy anything nowadays, right, you go into an electrical shop or a computer shop or anything, anything at all, really, but not food. Anything that's like, you know, not food. buy what you're going to buy, right? Buy it. Take it outside the shop. As you shut the shop door, go back in. Say, it doesn't work, I'll have another one. Because that saves you taking it home, finding out it doesn't work, and having to go back to get another one.
That is a top tip, I have to say.
That will be on the Consumer Action website this afternoon, boys and girls. As we touched on last week, the only people to get rich are lawyers. I want to be a lawyer next life.
I want to be a lawyer.
Unbelievable. Apparently the...
on the radio, rubbish.
And I think, Mark, you featured this on your website as well, that the company called ACS Law that are making, get this, they are trying to get money back for copyright holders, but the Guardian's actually reporting that they're making more money from the legal fines than the copyright holders themselves. Now, that can't be right, can it?
Well, I mean, that sounds amazing, doesn't it, really? You'd expect that the owners of the copyright would finally get the majority of the cash. I mean, it's a kind of debt collecting, and debt collectors only get, you know, sort of a percentage, maybe quite a large percentage, but I can't imagine they get that kind of thing. So, yes, it's extraordinary, and I wonder if the copyright owners really realise that. Maybe more questions will be asked.
Lee, did you suffer this in newspaper days?
What's that? I'm not listening. No.
No.
You didn't really. So it's a different thing. The problem with this, the reason these lawyers are making so much money, is because it is a lawless society now. And it's like, I've said this before, but it's the truth. It's like going back to the Wild West. And the internet really now operates kangaroo courts and brothels, just like they did in the Wild West. And these lawyers are out there at the frontier grabbing money left, right and centre, wherever they can, because people don't understand.
Talking of people grabbing money, it reminds me that I saw the adverts. The Times is one of them, where they're advertising like crazy. You now have to pay to read the newspapers online. It just costs you £1, so you can save yourself some money there. But it does beg the question, what's going to happen once they're all locked in and all these newspapers disappear, because you have to subscribe to read them? Is it going to bring a whole new breed of journalists that are online with more people reading them, and newspapers all just disappear into the sunset?
No, Eric. You can't start this argument again. I'm in far too bad a mood.
Why? Mark, we've debated this before. If you think of the scenario, Mark, where everything on from a traditional newspaper is by subscription, so you can't read it online, can you see an opening for new online newspapers to end up with more clout than the traditional print media?
Well, I mean, I'm sure there's always going to be a market for new things, and particularly if they undercut whatever's on the existing market. You're talking about the print media as paper.
Yes.
Well, I have to say that, I mean, I use an e-reader, an electronic reader, which I've got from Amazon, which I think is fantastic. And although I don't use it every day, if I go away or I go on holiday or something like that, I mean, I can download UK newspapers wherever I am in the world, a lot less less cost than I get them in a Parisian newspaper shop. And I think it's just amazing. Mm-hmm. And I can imagine that eventually, you know, it can catch on. Whether people are going to want to log onto a computer to see their newspapers all the time, that I doubt. But I can see that people are going to start carrying e-readers as they get more popular and the technology gets better.
Well, I hadn't thought of that.
That's a very good point, Mark. But the simple fact is, and I will rest my case after I've said this, very simply, the newspapers were very tardy in the print media was very tardy in following up on new media. Now they're catching up very, very quickly. Mm. And the difference is that we've had examples of what's going on the internet now. The way that there is no control is causing a lot of problems. Once the newspapers get back into their rightful place as the news providers, proper professional news providers, then that they will still rule the world. We will continue to rule the world.
Oh, kill these
off. I rest of my case.
Well, I think it's a really, you know, really good point that you're making. And I think I don't want to say that they have to rule the world. And I mean, I hope that there will continue to be, you know, great competition. But I certainly think that they've got a proper place and they've been, in a way, sort of losing it. And, of course, they've fouled up by allowing this culture of free newspapers to start existing on the internet. Let me say, I think that's a great thing.
Hang about, Mark. No, that isn't true. That's not fair. Newspapers didn't suffer because they allowed these free newspapers to get on the internet. The people, the internet users, suffered because of the free newspapers on the internet because they were getting bogus information. There was no editorial control. The newspapers that are going out on subscription now mm-hmm. have proper editorial control, and they will. You can trust them. That's the thing. That's what upsets Eric. You can actually trust newspapers where you
well,
can't.
Actually,
this is the point of view of a newspaper man. That
yes, I was going to pose a question there. So, if newspapers are so unbiased, I want to see a headline in the Daily Mirror in the UK, which is a left-wing newspaper, saying the latest Conservative Liberal Democrat coalition is the best thing to happen since sliced bread in England. Conversely, I want to see in a right-wing sort of led newspaper saying that Mr. Miliband, the new leader of the Labour Party, is going to be Prime Minister next time because he's wonderful. It's not going to happen.
But there's no such thing as an independent, fully independent newspaper reporting, is it? I mean, it's always going to reflect the interests eventually of the owners of the newspaper in
Correct.
Some way.
Well, no, not necessarily. It reflects actually the complexion of the editor. That's what you have an editor for. You get a lot of pressure. I've had lots of pressure over from proprietors who have tried to stamp their mark on the editorial content. But just think, the owner of the newspaper bought the newspaper because he thought it would
make money.
His political views. Therefore, it's quite right that represents the owner.
So what you're basically, to summarise all that lot then, Lee, newspapers are biased.
Of course they are. Of course they are newspapers biased.
They are biased, but of course, I mean,
tell everybody else what the other people are thinking.
Yeah, but the answer is don't read one newspaper. I mean, like any kind of research, whether it just happens to be sort of casual newspaper reading or what have you, you go around and you get a selection, and then, you know, eventually you get enough conflicting views and you form your own opinion in the middle.
Let's move on. Nice. Very, very disturbing story for me, this one, and I will start slowly, because it's making the hairs on my arm stand up on end. I was one of the people, unfortunately, who had to open broadcasting in the United Kingdom just 4 days after Princess Diana died. And I have to say, it was the most horrific programme for me to ever do. And I never have to want to do another one like that, I can assure you. And to hear that this guy, the Commonwealth Games governor in India, thanked Princess Diana for attending the opening ceremony. Yeah. What the hell was he doing?
Well, I worked for 14 days solid, without a break. I didn't even go home for 14 days working on the story of Diana. And the fact is that even 10 years later, she is still the most famous woman in the world. Mm. And she deserves some respect. And for this idiot, this absolute idiot, to make that kind of mistake while Prince Charles is there with Camilla, is unbelievable. One way or the other, India, I have no disrespect for India at all, but one way or the other, they have destroyed the Commonwealth Games, and this was like the final nail in the coffin.
Jesus.
Well, I have to say, I mean, I think the most important thing is that this is a mistake. I mean, it's gone very, very badly, hasn't it, the Commonwealth Games?
Yep.
And,
yeah.
And I mean, these people and this guy must be under enormous stress. You know, I wonder whether, you know, I mean, obviously I'm quite sure that Prince Charles and Camilla and everybody else are sort of shocked to hear it. But people must realise it's a mistake. I feel very sorry for India. I think this was a very important event for them. It's, you know, it's been completely...
And they've cocked it up.
And yes, you're quite right. And they've cocked it up. They really have cocked it up.
Are you allowed to say that word, cock, on the programme, Eric?
In that context, yes.
Cock-a-doodle-doo.
Yes, exactly.
In that context as well, yeah.
Yes.
You know, but I must say, I feel so sad. I think that a country like India needs, if you like, sort of, you know, the pride that this could have conferred on them, and they've rather lost it. I hate to think what's happened to this guy in terms of, you know, his job prospects and so forth. I mean, you know, we used to hear these, you know, crazy things being said, for instance, by George Bush all the time, and he became a figure of fun. And, you know, the whole thing's very unfortunate. I think that, you know, this is a man under stress. This is a company who deserved, a country which deserved better. I'm sorry it's gone this way, but in terms of being sort of shocked or actually blaming him, I can't bring myself to do that.
Okay, moving along. On the week where Facebook groups come to a new world, which we'll tell you about in a minute, and again, boys and girls, you can see this on our schedule on Scribd. The Facebook founder, Mark, closed he closed the offices, right? And he took the staff out to see the spoof Facebook movie. Also this week, a report suggests, get this, that in a couple of years' time, Facebook could be bigger and more influential than Google. There's a shock to this.
I can see that happening.
Yeah. The new groups that have come up, and there's got some new features on. One of the big features on the new Facebook groups, boys and girls, is by default, new groups will be closed, thereby giving you further security. And, of course, you can always, if you've got a group and want to keep it just for your family and friends only, you can make groups closed. There's an option to edit that, and it stops other people looking at maybe photos of your younger siblings.
Can't you do that now, anyway? I thought you could.
You can, but by default, the new setting is going to be closed. Yeah. And then you have to make it open.
Oh, right, by default, yeah.
Yeah,
right.
The default's always going to be closed now. So if you have got younger sibling photographs on there and things like that, by default, everything will be closed. But don't forget, you can actually change a group to closed so that the less salubrious people that may join Facebook won't be able to see your photos. And that's never a bad thing, is it?
No. I'd say that's the thing, though, with Facebook. These groups, actually, it does make a lot of sense, because the problem with Facebook is that Facebook has hidden shallows. Mm-hmm. You know, if you think how many friends you've got on Facebook, you don't really have that many friends in your life. People just went on this incredible journey to find as many friends as they could. You know, I have thousands of friends.
Do you know what they used to call it in the 1970s?
What?
CB
what?
Radio.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
I accept. I'd be very friendly to
them. I don't know at all. Apparently, to help the UK's Prime Minister, a six-year-old girl has sent her tooth fairy money to David Cameron as she wants to help make the country better and pay for jobs. How sweet is that?
Well, I'm sorry, but sorry while I go out and be sick, because I have to say that, you know, this piece of news, is it really news? I mean, here's something that's happened which presumably has been seized upon because it's a nice bit of publicity, and presumably the idea is that people are going to lap it up. Well, I don't know.
yeah.
I couldn't possibly lap it up.
Yeah, but see you're actually doing something that Lee explained to us brilliantly a few weeks ago, Mark, where... We don't like necessarily this kind of pink ribboned lovey news so much, and we're always looking for the hard hitting news. So is it any surprise that newspaper headlines are positively negative every day of the week?
Well, all right. I mean, if you say so. But I mean, does Cameron really think that this piece of news is going to do his party any good? I mean,
maybe it is. I think you're starting from the wrong point of view.
It may well be
the Tory party that have put this story out as a bit of publicity for themselves. But that almost certainly is how it was arrived at. Well, most certainly what happened is that the mother told somebody in the local newspaper what a wonderful thing the daughter had done. And as a dyed-in-the-wool, I've just swallowed a hair. I didn't even know I've got rabbits in my house. But yeah, no, but they, right, they would have sold the story. As a news, I'm dyed-in-the-wool. I caught the Yorkshire Ripper. I did Diana's death. I'm a hard-nosed journalist. But I would see this as a good little story. This little girl, 6-year-old, is so moved by the way this country's going. This is a good publicity for Cameron at all. This is a 6-year-old who can see how desperate Britain's becoming, and she sent him her quid.
Lee Banks has got a heart. Lee Banks.
I've got a nose for news.
Well, I think this story was probably sent to the local Conservative Party,
who
then decided to pull a few strings and get somebody interested, simply because it came at a very convenient moment.
Moving along, he says.
Everybody knows my job better than me.
Marvellous. Apparently, Staffordshire is the home of ghouls, ghosts, and all things scary. This has to be the award for the most well-written press release I've seen this week, out of the hundreds I've got, because we genuinely get hundreds into the station every day. And I just had to, this was just so well-written. And it's something to do with the history of Lichfield's Market Square, burnings, ghosts of Dam Street, and the mystery of something else. And it's all talking about ghosts, Mr. Ghost Hunter Television.
I know. I know Lichfield very well. It's only up the road from me. And the thing with these ghost tours, right, I know I sound very negative today, but I've had a terrible, terrible week. The problem with these ghost tours, as a fact, that all they do, they walk you around the street and say, and on that corner there, that's what happened. And on that other corner, somebody got hanged, and there, now, there, can you see them? And it isn't. Well, my ghost tours take you places where you get really scared.
If you could actually hear it.
It's not scary in Lichfield. And right. This is where Mark's going on about the, what's it? This is a county council who's organised these tours. Where have the county council been ghostbusted?
I don't know. Anyway, you can find out more about that on enjoystaffordshire.com. Both Mark and I used to live in London. Lee's a Mancunian, so there's no hope for comment from him on this one. And I think the lovies have lost it. This is a story about £42 a ticket to sleep on a London theatre floor.
No.
London's Barbican Theatre is to stage a show which involves the audience, that could be the interesting bit, changing into their nightwear, brushing their teeth and having a little sleepover. It's produced by the Ducky Theatre Company. Thank you, Mark.
Sorry, did somebody say something?
Thank you so much. Apparently, they are going to sell tickets to this event, which will the overnight experience will be priced at £42 and are going on sale next month. What has the world come to?
Well, I have to say, you know, £42 for a London hotel room.
Actually, that's not bad.
In a bed. I mean, it's not bad, is it?
Ah, good point.
Barbecue. Sorry, not the barbecue. The Barbican. And the Barbican. I mean,
true.
You'd pay a lot more if you went to a real hotel, so maybe it's a good deal.
It's just not,
the thing is also, yeah, did you read this bit, Eric?
What?
The producer of the show, Simon Cassens, says, every time I go to the theatre, I fall asleep.
Me too! Eureka.
The thing is, you have to accept, right, that this, like going to sleep, is a good old tried and tested artistic endeavour. It always has been. Look at John and Yoko's sleeping.
I don't believe it.
Look at Tracy Emin's bed. What about I wouldn't.
Serious note now, boys and girls, about the use of a laptop. And this is an old subject that's come back to haunt me again, as we did some stories on this about 10, 15 years ago. Apparently, a medical report has found that placing a laptop device next to the skin for long periods of time can lead to toasted skin syndrome. Now, that means it's just sort of burning you a bit, and you should know better. And they've gone on all about this sort of stuff from Dr. Kimberly Salke, who's treated women and all this sort of stuff. But the truth is, you should never put electrical stuff like that on your lap. You should never put them on a dusty carpet, even if you've got...
Eric, what? It's called a laptop.
Okay. I'll buy that one.
Great.
So what, yes. That's why we call them notebooks now.
Why can't you put your laptop on a dusty carpet? All my laptops spend half the life on a dusty carpet.
Well, that's probably
carpet.
Why they're always breaking, because the dust goes is sucked up by the little cooling fan inside, and you end up having to hoover your computer out because it's full of junk.
Oh, no, I didn't know that. I know I'm a bit crotchety today, but I have to hold my hands up and say that I have actually burnt my gentleman's sausage on my laptop.
But as a top consumer tip, there is a little...
It was the tip!
There is a consumer device which you can buy. It's a sort of a plastic mounting thing that you put on your legs, sits across like a tray, and your laptop sits on top of it. They came out well over 10 years ago. They're very...
A docking station.
No, it's a plastic tray.
And it's just, sure you don't use an eye in that. Yeah.
So, stop it. And it avoids your body coming into contact with your laptop, as Lee puts it. And the air can flow through it properly. It stays nice and cool. Everything's marvellous. It's really...
It's like wearing a skirt, isn't it?
Toilet time already.
The crown jewels,
yes, exactly. So you can get a thing to fix it. A man has been jailed over a computer password issue up in Liverpool in the UK. Oliver Drage, who's 19 years old, was arrested.
I think you should say that name a few times. He deserves everything that he gets.
Well, he was arrested in 2009 by police tackling child sexual exploitation. Guy wouldn't give his password to the police, which is one of the 50 character encryption passwords, which I have to confess is actually a bit of a so-and-so to crack. But after going through all the process with the police, he was then taken to court. And what the police have said is it sends a robust message out to those intent on trying to mask their online criminal activities that they will be taken before the courts with the ultimate sanction, as is in this case, being a custodial sentence. And you've got a 19-year-old kid who's been jailed for 16 weeks. His career, whatever it was going to be, is now completely down the toilet with a criminal record like that. And if he got nothing to hide, why didn't he just give the police the code? It would have been much easier.
Exactly. That is one of the few points where it's reasonable to say that silence equals guilt.
Yeah. Mark?
Well, yeah, I quite agree. I mean, it is a very sort of strange thing. I have to say, you know, this isn't really surprising in a way, because if you refuse to submit to a stop and search, you could also end up, getting sanctioned. And the only disturbing thing about this, I mean, nobody wants to actually say, okay, he's been involved in this suspected offence, child sexual exploitation. That hasn't been proved. But on the other hand, we've got a strange situation here, because if, for instance, somebody has been involved in this, it's easier, really, if you like, sort of to refuse to hand out your password. You'll get 16 weeks or whatever it is inside.
True.
But you know, if you're actually responsible for the offence, you'd get something much more serious. You'd be on the sex offenders register for an awful long time. Mm-hmm. So actually, this could be a very easy way out. And one wonders whether actually there shouldn't be a review of the way this kind of matter is dealt with, possibly even to impose longer sentences. And I sound like a right old Tory on this, but
that's it, boys and girls. That was the last comment on postcard from Pop Brad for this week. You can find out more about Lee G. Banks on ghosthuntertv.blogspot.com, and of course, Mark Gander, the co-founder of ConsumerActionGroup.com. You'll find him over there as well. And from me, Eric Wiltshire, we'll see you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.
RTI.